Hey, good afternoon, everyone. This is Sean Harris, and I'm around the table at the Brian Pastors, and we've got an article that was sent in to us by one of our faithful listeners. It's from the Dallas Morning News. Is it recent? Do we have a date?
Yes, it was November a week 3rd. Or two into November, yeah.
Yep.
November 3rd. So.
All right, I didn't see that.
Yeah, and he sent it to me about a week and a half ago, so before the Thanksgiving holiday. So it was more recent when he suggested it.
We are no longer bound together by religion, but by vacuous consumption addictions. Did I pronounce that word back?
Yes.
The nuns, whose religion is nothing in particular, are growing. Yep, we keep hearing about that. Religion is now in decline, though
is not in decline.
Right, religion is not in decline. Thank you, Brian. Though such are the headlines.
The latest Pew Research poll heralding the rise of the nuns, whose religion is, as they answer...
Should we spell that as N-O-N-E-S?
Yes.
Not your Catholic nuns.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
But
right.
They are universal.
Yes.
As they answer, nothing in particular has spawned, as such polls always do, reports of the demise of religion. An obituary, either welcomed or lamented, depending, obviously, upon one's more ultimate opinions. At the very least, it's a good media filler, the stuff of clickbait, of Twitter and wasted time. Now, of course, I don't refute Pew's findings. The nuns, N-O-N-E-S, with their nothing in particular, are real. The practice of the Christian religion, in whatever form, is rarer today than in the past. The mainline churches are virtually extinct. Among Catholics, mass attendance is but an occasional thing, no matter how obligatory it is said to be. Even big unaffiliated churches, those charismatic coffee shop cults of personality, are shrinking. Revival, if it exists, is sporadic and isolated. That's the gist of it. The truth of Pew's statistics, churches are fading from the American scene. And one can easily guess the reasons. Abuse crisis, self-serving institutions, denominational infighting, lost cultural relevance. These are the stories of Catholics, Baptists, Methodists, Episcopalians, and others. Nothing new, as St. Gregory of Nyssa said centuries ago, the church has often been transferred to the stage and made a laughingstock for just these reasons. Such has been believers' humiliating lot several times throughout history. To suffer so many bumbling, self-inflicted wounds, it's not hard to see why people want nothing of these ecclesiastical bodies, many of them now but pathetic spiritual zombies. But that doesn't mean religion is declining. We must, at this point, resist the myth of some post-religious, post-faith secular age. There is no such thing, and that's because human beings can't help but be religious. It's simply a question of how. And that's because religion belongs to the order of things, to human existence and orientation, because we are ineluctably and eternally homo religiosus.
All right, so obviously our author is a secularist, right? Of some
sort. Sure, seems like it.
Do we know who?
Yes.
It says.
Joshua J. Whitfield.
He is pastoral administrator of St. Rita Catholic Community in Dallas and a frequent contributor at the Dallas Morning News. So this is a Catholic administrator.
Yeah. So what would we say with regard to why are human beings everywhere in all cultures religious without regard to? What would the biblical answer be to that question? Because he gives a non-biblical answer.
The answer is they were made in the image of God to have a relationship with their Creator. That before there was any sin in the world, there was a man and there was a woman who had fellowship with God, a spirit being. And so even after the fall of man, there is still that created order that there was intended a relationship between the Creator and the created.
Romans chapter 1.
Tell us.
When they knew God, they were no longer grateful to God, so they forgot God, and they began to worship the creature more than the Creator. So we were given over to defile ourselves, first with male and female sexual immorality, then into homosexuality, to a mind that is devoid of judgment and cannot tell right from wrong. And even those who believe that they are religious and believe that they are walking in the way and are truly trying to follow Christ fall into that litany of things at the bottom that seem nicknoid and minor in comparison to what Paul had just laid out, but says because we participate in that and we even joke about it, we contribute it to the overall downfall because we ourselves don't take holiness serious.
What were you looking up, John? You were in Genesis?
Yeah, just Genesis 1:27, which Brian basically said. If you combine the Genesis 1:27, and you can combine what you said, because your question was, why do we think that humans have this internal need for religion, even if they get the wrong one, right?
Right.
And that's Genesis 1:27. And then if we look at probably the entire article, Romans, what you're talking about, the question, you know, what Paul lays out there in Romans seems very cyclical, like, this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and it's kind of like a downward spiral. But my question is, ever in history, does the spiral get lifted back up, and then head back down again, and lift back up, head back down, or
does.
Is it just from the beginning of time to the end of time going to be one long downward spiral?
Well, but I think it does, because if you look at the modern circumstances of America today with ancient Rome, there was a rising up when the church first came into existence after the resurrection of Christ. And there was certainly a decline in the immorality that was practiced in Rome as Christianity took root among true believers, and they influenced the communities. However, eventually Rome did then re-decline. You'll see it in many civilizations. America's founding started much high. It was brought from a lower morality of England to a higher, or of Europe, to a higher, to decline. And it's because generally what will happen is when we see a new nation rise with a high morality built upon biblical principles, is the original founders do, maybe not totally right with God, but do have this great awareness of God. They try their best. Right. And then generational fall away occurs until the nations decline to the point of, does God either let them continue to exist, or does he change them over to a new government, a new people?
And
we see that with the book of Judges. If we wanted to put it into a micro state, Israel did that a lot in the book of Judges over the 450 years of the Judges.
Yeah, this cycle.
Cycle. And my thing of Romans, though, is that the biggest key, the linchpin of that is they worship the creature or the creation more than the creator. And that's the universal religious nature of it. Is either you're worshiping God or you're worshiping an aspect of something that God created, even if it's yourself.
Right, and I hear you. However, you can go all the way back to the Egyptians and see where they're worshiping the sun god and they're worshiping the animals and all this. So that's why I ask, is this cyclical? Is this just always going to be a part of society does this and a part follows the truth?
Yes. Yes,
as an anthropomorphic study, is this like the condition of man or is it a condition of... percentage of man? I mean, how does this work?
I think it's cyclic for regions, but I think overall for the total of history, it is a constant state from the garden.
You almost kind of wonder, you know, sitting here thinking about it, is go back into, you know, what we have recorded as I'd say dual fulfillment of the fall of Satan, you know, when it's recorded where, you know, Lucifer, the son of the morning, you know, he said, I will ascend. I mean, he was desiring worship.
Are we talking Ezekiel 28, or are we talking Isaiah?
I think I'm referring to Isaiah. Yeah. And so both passages, you know, most people would say they're initially referring to local kings at the time, but can be paralleled to the fall of Satan.
Okay, so the prince of Tyre and Sidon and
right.
The king of Tyre and Sidon.
And so looking at that, and so... that's typically what we were instructed and what we teach is that Satan desired for himself that which belonged only to God, which is religion, which is worship. He wanted what God, and so, you know, we're talking about humanity as a whole throughout all history, but I almost wonder, even extending it back to the angelic race,
would probably be before creation, at least the creation of man, depending on, you know, where you put things. But just stopping to think as far as created beings in a larger scope than just mankind. If that's something that God created both angels to worship something or to be religious, if we're going to use that term that broadly, as well as humans.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of sheds a little more light onto our Genesis 1:27 reference, because we're going back and saying man was created in the image of God, and that's why we have this. But you're absolutely correct. For whatever reason, Lucifer desired to worship for himself rather than God, which is very Romanesque. And that was before all in Adam died, which is also an interesting thought, because, you know, if you think about, you know, because we talk about, that because all are born now after the fall, that all men are depraved. They're dead. They're in their trespasses and sins. They have no ability on their own to save themselves. However, if you think about the fact that Adam and Eve fell in the garden when they didn't have a sin nature, I'm assuming, because there's no mention of that they had a sin nature before that. I mean, it's only speculation, but in a perfect environment where they walked with God and everything was perfect, they still chose their own way.
To worship the creature rather than the Creator.
Right, because she fell for that line of Satan. It'll be like God, he's holding out from you, and so on and so forth. So yeah, I mean, it goes back, even predates.
Well, Ezekiel 3:11 says that God has set eternity in the hearts of man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have a desire for something more. We're aware of the fact that there's something more.
Even the atheist kind of fears death.
There's an awareness of it. There has to be something more. All right, our article continues.
So if you'll allow him, St. Thomas Aquinas helps us here. Religion, he said, is derived from one of two Latin words, reasonably from both. And Dave McManus would be mad at me for butchering these Latin words. Religate, which means to reread, or religare, which means to bind together. That's what religion is essentially. The scholastic doctor taught that which holds our attention, what in a sense we reread, and that which binds us together, which gives structure to our lives. For St. Thomas, it was simply a question of what holds our attention and binds us together. What humans must pay attention to, something and always seeking structure is part of being human. That's why there will always be religion. It's just that St. Thomas thought it better to pay attention to God instead of something else. And this helps us discover what exactly our religion is and why it's not in decline. Because it helps us see that for many, Christianity, or Judaism, or Islam, or Buddhism, for that matter, hasn't been our religion for quite some time, especially in the West, but something else. But what? If religion is that which holds our attention and which binds us together, then it's not Christianity. Christianity today is mostly just sentimentality, escapist devotion, mere identity politics, and mere posture. It's no longer religion in any genuine sense. Because what holds our attention today, what binds us together, are no longer dogma and precepts, but instead all those decadent diversions, customs and conventions of our rich but interiorly vacuous society. This is our religion today. Binge-watching Netflix, consumption addictions to various social media, pornography, and the litanies of endless news, fake or otherwise. This is what we relegate, what we reread. What holds our attention? Not God or the good, the true or the beautiful. This is the new religion, homogenizing imagination and sedating moral impulse, rendering us more pliable to the free movement of capital. This is the economic spirituality of influence. This is the theology of advertising. Likewise, we also see our new religion in what schedules us. No longer rhythmed by the worship of our gods or by the earth's seasons, now our lives are paced by the quarters of our fiscal year and by our Black Fridays, for instance, and no longer our Thanksgivings. Add to this, especially among the middle classes, the religion of sports, that countless meaningless practices and games now set the schedules for innumerable families, no longer Sabbaths or Sundays or family ties, that is truly religare. This is what binds us. Not holy days, rituals, or quaint moralities, more than any persecutions. These have displaced the old religions. These new, screened, advertised, unstable rites, and less any incarnate old fickle gods. And it's why the question for me is not how we'll live in some new non-religious world, but what about piety and devotion looks like in this new emerging religion. But of course, this, I admit, I can't begin to imagine. Tied as I prefer to be to my ancient God, I just wonder if it will be a religion of charity, a religion that will either cherish or kill the poor. I wonder if it will restore or ruin the earth, if it's a religion of equality or elites. These are the questions that haunt me as I wonder what the nuns, with their nothing in particular, will become. Because they must become something. I'm just frightened by what they may be.
Well, he's a good writer, there's no doubt. He doesn't have a biblical worldview, but he is a good writer.
He's right.
In some senses.
Last paragraph.
In some senses, he's right. He's not addressing the fundamental belief of core evangelicalism, which is regeneration, that God the Holy Spirit does a work of regeneration on the hearts of some particular people. We don't understand who and why.
As a Roman Catholic, he can't admit that it even exists.
Well, and I don't even think he goes far enough, and it sounds like from his language he wouldn't be willing to say that there is one right religion.
Absolute truth.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's paramount.
Well, sure, because he throws everybody in a larger category in the way he articulates.
Because his main measurement is, are you following the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Christ? And that whole narrative that we see in the Bible, his main measurement is, are they going to restore the earth, destroy the earth, take care of the poor, abuse the poor? And it's that whole, it's a pseudo-religion. I mean, that's just all there is to it, this idea that, you know, the ultimate measurement in the world is kindness and whether you care for the poor.
Yeah, and somehow, John, we have to be able to articulate simultaneously that Christianity does call us to be kind.
Yes.
It does call us to be good stewards. It does call us to preserve the earth as much as possible. We don't dump our oil down the stormwater drain systems
but
and all that.
That's not our redemption.
Right. That's not our redemption.
And it's not even our eternal home.
No, it's not. But somehow, because those aspects are in Christianity, we just get lumped with another, like Dennis Prager, you know, will say very pragmatic things like, well, all religions are good if they get people to be better. Well, and there are people that are nodding their heads as they hear Dennis Prager say that. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care whether you convert to Christ or whether you convert to Buddha or whether you convert to Allah, as long as you're a better person, because what we need is better people. The problem is Jesus doesn't let us adopt that worldview. And there are millions of people in churches all over America that don't seem to understand that Jesus would not be nodding his head on that. You know, when he says, you got to know me, I'm the way, the truth, and life, and no man comes to the Father but by me, that's incredibly offensive.
Absolutely.
That's giantly exclusive.
As he's speaking that to an audience that they were the exclusive religion.
Right.
So.
And our author is rightly identifying that he's concerned about the direction of our nation as the religion of the nuns increases. But we as Christians understand that the love is going to wax worse and worse, that it's not going to get better, that there is no hope for a regenerated world.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Nate. Well, I was just saying, against Prager's view, he's all about, like, America's benefit,
mm-hmm.
and the church is much bigger than that, and, Christ is all about his Father's kingdom. And I think that's somewhat, he's kind of missing the whole point. as well. Good thing our church isn't dependent on America. As we would say where America is declining, we would say it's increasing maybe in countries like China.
At least we hope so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and we have to remember that regardless of what one's eschatological stance is, we're told, except the days be short, and even the elect will be cut off. So there is the Reconstructionist mindset that the earth is going to keep getting better and better and better and better until one day Christ just joins us.
It's utterly unbiblical.
It's absolutely unbiblical. Mm-hmm. And so you can't, you know, kind of coming full circle to the conversation we kind of started with of these cycles in human history, I don't know where in any of those cycles we are necessarily, as far as is it humanity in globally, is it humanity in America versus humanity in Central America, you know, or at what point in any of those cycles is Christ returning to this earth? Because we're not necessarily told at what point, but it's something for us to stop and think about. I mean, and we're even dealing with this in our own ministry. An example of the nuns of religion. In my freshman Bible class today, I asked 26, 27 students, what's a denomination? And the room was dead silent. So then I spent 5 minutes talking about denominations.
Like a 5, a 10, and a 1.
Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, and they know me that I'll mess with
them. I think
you
mean Christian denominations.
No, what I meant, and I was messing with them, it was like a denomination. Like, you know, you're going to vote for them, and so before you can, you got to put in the denomination, you know, to denominate them.
and then like three kids got it.
Do you have an AA Ron in your class?
No, but my kids get that. And so I spent several minutes talking about denominations and what some of them were and even addressing a couple of the different ones in our class because we have a very diverse, you know, Christian
student body.
And so then I went and asked again, so what's a denomination? And the room was almost just as silent. I had a couple kids that were trying. It was just
you must suck as a teacher. That's the only thing I need to include.
Clearly, that's what it is. So,
right.
Well, no, mean, they had ball games last night.
They stopped putting them in the name, so they might not know because now it's the river and the rock and the summit and
elevation.
Who knows what we are? Oh, you're a Presbyterian, but you're called the summit, and then you're a Baptist, but you're called the rock. I mean,
right.
But they have a cool website.
Or Cliffdale Center.
I think for me the good news is that although the nuns are now more vocal, we shouldn't think in terms of the church is shrinking. It's just that the nuns are now, the stigma of being non-Christian has been removed, so you can now say I'm a nun, whereas 25 years ago you would be a nun, but you would never declare yourself a nun.
In some sense, it makes it a little bit easier.
Well, it does make it easier in the sense of, you know, like I tell my seniors all the time, I don't suppose that you guys are all converted. I know that there are many of you in here that believe in evolution. You think that you came from monkeys. There are several of you that have an agnostic worldview. Let's talk about that worldview. Let's talk about an atheist worldview. All you atheists in here right now, I don't presume for a moment that they're all converted, or that's absurdity.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting looking at human history, and you know, we kind of talked about the Romans passage, but then also thinking of the Roman government. When you have the church growing in the first couple centuries, you know, it's growing under persecution. And you find any conservative biblical scholar, and they're going to tell you that the legalization of Christianity was detrimental. And that it was not, yeah, sure, it made it easier, but it drastically changed the landscape of the church because it became popular. And realistically, up until, I mean, what now in our post-religious world that we're kind of discussing, only now is it finally moving away from the stigma of being popular to claim religion. I mean, so you're talking, what, 1700 years? Of history in, you know, in the world where it was popular, or you were, you know, to say that there was a God, or to say that you were religious,
I mean, you have the Holy Roman Empire, you have the Roman Catholic Church, you have state churches all throughout human history, you know, since the first couple centuries of...
Right, and why is that? See, the atheist and the agnostic won't answer that question.
They can't answer that question because it has to go to something that they don't believe in.
Right.
Or they don't know if it's there.
Just
because it's something bigger and greater,
it's
more powerful
that has
than
to be identified,
than us.
Complicated.
But his fear of what state will they leave the world in is so humanistic in its mindset.
Sure it is. Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is that the nuns are people. And these people are going to be motivated by certain intrinsic values. One, love. It may be a misconstrued love. It may be a misunderstood love. But there is a compassionate value that's being driven into it and need to have other humans within in context with them. Things of that nature. So we're going to see GoFundMe pages continue to increase and make headway. And we're going to see cancer research. And we're going to see fighting this disease, fighting that disease. Are they going to ruin the earth? No. They're going to try to restore the earth because they're going to go into, let's take the plastics out of the oceans, let's clean up the beaches, because these are their playgrounds.
Yep.
These are the environments that they care for. They don't care for God, they care for His creation because they worship His creation with unknowingly. I want the beach to be clean for my family, so I'm going to give to save the whales, save the sea turtles,
yep.
Protect the environment.
Get less plastic in the ocean.
And all of these different things. So we're going to see all of that take place. And if there is a silver lining to their damnation, I guess that would have to be it. They're probably actually good stewards of environment.
In some sense, they're exercising the character and nature of their creator.
Right, and caring for its creation.
And where does that come from in a Darwinian worldview? In a Darwinian worldview, where are the animals concerned about the planet that they... That doesn't equate to survival of the fittest.
You've also had it figured out.
You care about yourself. That's all you care about. These are the things that have challenged me in the sense of you explain to me where empathy came into our human existence if you embrace a Darwinian worldview. You would never become empathetic if you were only concerned with your survival. You know, you shoot first and ask questions later. When you're concerned about your own survival,
yes, quid pro wouldn't bother you at all.
No,
the way it's supposed to be,
right?
And if a person is stupid enough to do something to take themselves out of the process, out of the gene pool and everything else, that's better because we're going to survive.
That's right, and I mean it is a Nazi mentality whereby you're
and I'm not going to warn you if you're doing something stupid because. When you do something stupid, you're one less male in my competition for female attention.
Right. That's exactly right. That's a Darwinian worldview. The Darwinian worldview is not presented in its harshness, in its grossness, in its...
No, it's presented in its absolute subtle way. And it's funny that we're talking about this, and I don't know why it ran through my head earlier, for whatever reason. I think it's because I was looking at something. The movie Wonder Woman was a blockbuster movie, right? And everything else. And there's a scene in there where the American fighter pilot has crash-landed and come into the Amazon region and all this, and he's first encountering... I don't know why, because we're having mythology and literature right now. Artemis or Diana, the... in the Amazons, and she states to him, men are required for reproduction. They are not required for pleasure. Mm-hmm. And the conversation was all in the context of sex. And that has become a sharp reality.
Mm-hmm.
Even the LGBTQ movement may not engage in heterosexual activity, but they recognize that the other sex is necessary
mm-hmm.
for me and my partner to have a child. So in vitro insemination, the adoption processes,
They don't want intercourse between a biological male and a biological female to be wiped from the planet because they need that.
Mm-hmm. Or we at least need you to put it into a specimen cup.
Yes, and help.
Right.
Well, this is an interesting article. What I would conclude us with is, you know, we can't lose sight of the fact that God ordained that we would be born into this time frame. This
right.
is the world that we're supposed to evangelize. This is the world that we're supposed to create disciples. This is, instead of lamenting the period of time that we're at, this is the reality. This is the world we're supposed to be in to accomplish the Great Commission.
And I would submit to you that there's much worse time periods to be born into.
Absolutely.
I mean, can you imagine being born into the time period when the Egyptians and the entire world was chasing after false gods except for the nation of Israel, which, and they didn't even really do what they're supposed to either.
No, they didn't. Well, thanks for a great article. Send them in. Keep sending them in. Y'all have a great week. Thanks for listening.